I want to talk a little bit about everybody's favorite subject, suffering. It's the one thing Buddha was very adamant about, basically, that life is suffering. And there are days when you know that in a very deep way, and there are days when you manage to pretend that that's not true. The idea of suffering is pretty simple. It's about pain and loss. And it is about wishing for permanence in an impermanent state. Wanting health in a body that will ultimately deteriorate. Wanting happiness from a world that has no substance. Wanting to build structures on ground that ultimately gives way. And investing in a life that in some way has no ultimate meaning. And all of these factors provoke suffering. Now, in your early years, when you're building your life, when you're dreaming about what your life will be, suffering is not all that apparent. Disappointments bring about suffering, but then you just overcome them, hopefully. Losses still have opportunity for recovery. Losing one relationship, you still have time to build another one. Even losing money or a career, you still have opportunity to turn that around. But as you start to get further and further along in your life, opportunities are fewer, recovery is harder, the immune system isn't what it used to be, and suffering really starts to appear on the horizon as something fairly unavoidable. I speak with knowledge. Last weekend I talked a little bit about my computer crash, which happened a week ago Friday. And it was really interesting to me. I suffered the death of my computer as though it was the death of somebody I cared about deeply. My lost photographs, my lost iTunes, my lost writings. And I'll be honest with you, I hadn't lost all that much. I had backed pretty much everything up. But there were some that were lost. I sent my computer off to a rescue place, and they called me 3 days later, could not be rescued. So I died again. My computer died a second time. Last night, I won't go into all the details, but we decided to try to take everything off of my iPod and put it onto the computer, backward programming, which you can't do legally. And it failed, and I lost everything on my iPod. So, death number three. Somewhere in the middle of all that, I got a cold. I took some cold remedy that my son gave me with these special herbs in it and broke out in a body full of hives. Suddenly I was Job. I went to the doctor. He gave me the best stuff they had. It didn't help. I itched and itched and itched, and I'm itching to this moment, to be honest, although I'm on more powerful medications. I blamed it on the herbs. It could have all been stress. If from the death of my computer 3 times. One likes to think that a spiritual life absolves you from suffering, absolves you from computer crashes and hives and all the other indignities of human experience. And of course it doesn't. Nobody gets away free. And I know so many people who practice spiritual life as a kind of talisman to protect off and ward off evil spirits, that these things don't come at you. They do come at you. They will come at everybody. And the only difference will be, how do you respond to these things? Well, I will tell you. When my computer crashed, I went into total madness. I just went into the sense of absolute grieving and walking around in circles, going, no, 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 this didn't happen, it didn't happen, it didn't happen. Something, it's wrong, it's something in my mind, it's all going to be there, it's going to be in the backup. All of this, what's called magical thinking, the sense of denial, the sense that it couldn't really have been true, and then the slow realization, moment upon moment, that it really was true, that I had suffered irretrievable loss. And what is irretrievable loss but coming up against the one thing we all hate the most? It is called reality. I could do nothing about it. Nothing I could do, no matter how much magical thinking I would do, no matter how much avoidance of the thought that what I would try to pretend wasn't there, it kept coming back. Reality kept presenting itself to me, and it was not a pleasant reality. It was a reality full of real loss and real grief, and it hurt. And every time my mind would go back to it, it would hurt all over again, just like it did the first time. My body didn't know what to do with it, so it got sick. Then it didn't know what to do with beyond that, and it got hives. Whatever it does to express its sort of outrage at reality. Because reality is what it is. And it will always be what it is, and we will always have a relationship to it that is either embracing what is or saying, why couldn't it have been otherwise? The woulda, coulda, shoulda phenomenon of human experience. We all want it to be our reality, the reality that our mind, our dreams, our story wants it to become. And reality has its own purpose. You want to go this way, it wants to go that way. You want to go up, it wants to go down. We judge that. We say, well, up is good, down is bad. Not that we really know. Reality is endless, infinite possibility reducing into one fact, compressing into, imploding into what is. Every second, and I've talked about this before, has within it infinite possibility, and the minute you move your finger from the left to the right or the right to the left, you have changed reality. You have altered the nature of what is. You have made this movement real. This goes on all day long with you. Every moment you live, you have compressed infinity into specificity of the moment. It's an enormously powerful thing to do. When you realize what you're doing, it's actually kind of scary. Especially when you realize how it is impermeable and it is irrefutable and you can't go back. How do you respond to reality? How do you relate to reality? Well, basically you have two choices. One is accept what is, and the other is fight it. Fighting tends to be counterproductive. Because what is. It will not become other because you wish or dream it so. People you love will cease to exist. Computers will crash. dates that you want to turn out into a wonderful evening will turn into horrible evenings. Moments that you absolutely thought were going to be terrible will suddenly be wonderful. It is totally unpredictable. It is what it is. The magic of spiritual life, or the wonder of spiritual life, is that you enter into what is without manipulating it, without questioning it, without hating it. You just approach it and go, yes. Do you do that instantaneously? Well, maybe if you're enlightened. If you're not enlightened, you walk around going, no, 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 no. But at some point, you actually go, this is the gesture, the hands in the air gesture. What can you do? That's what is. This is what is. Interestingly, the minute you go, I surrender, what can you do? This is what it is. Something deep inside you goes, okay, okay. Now I'm back to where I have to be. Now I have to go back and find a way to function within what is. What does that mean? Well, simply it means take the next step. When your computer crashes, you go out and you get it fixed to the best of your ability. You get a new hard drive. You go to the store. You buy the new programs. You reload your computer. It's stuff. It's the stuff that you do to move on, to take the next step. This is the new reality. When a relationship ends in your life, what do? You grieve for a period of time because that's absolutely essential and normal. You don't put yourself down for grieving. You just go through it. It will end at some point. And then you go through the process of, what do I do now to get a new relationship? You know, most people who want to really get a new relationship, lose weight, go to the gym, go on to one of the dating services, or ask people to see if they know anybody who's out there for them. Whatever the thing is, there are practical steps to go forward in your life story. Those steps arise out of the reality of accepting what is. If you don't accept what is, you create a barrier of hostility and anger and hatred at your life. You blame everybody else for what happened. You know, if somebody hadn't given me that thing with the computer, it wouldn't have crashed. If somebody hadn't done this, I wouldn't have lost that relationship. You become the blame person, who therefore is totally defended against the thing that happens and completely locked up in your own hell of rejection and resistance and denial. So blaming somebody else does nothing for you. Nothing. Even if there's a real person to blame, it does nothing for you. Blaming yourself does nothing for you. Hating yourself, which is what a lot of people choose to do, only complicates the problem. You know, drugs, drinking, sex, fantasy, all of that stuff also keeps you from the real place that wants more than anything to release you from your suffering. And that place is your core being, which is absolute reality. Absolute reality, as much as it's scary to us, as much as it has such crystalline hardness about it, because there's nothing you can do about it. You can't break through reality. All you can do is go yes to this extraordinary truth and be one with it. Let it speak inside you as your own core reality. Because reality is what you are. It's who you are. You are reality itself. You are the very essence of what is. And if you sit back and go, okay, I surrender, what does that mean? It means you've let go of your need to manipulate the world, to dream the world into place, and you enter into what the world is in you. And what you feel inside when you surrender and you return to yourself to reality is you feel lifted up, supported, you feel a kind of indomitable strength and willpower and a sense of capacity. You feel all of the forces of the universe suddenly rising up to support you in whatever it is you want to do and accomplish in your life. And you feel renewed by this place in you that never gets old, never gets tired, never gets wasted by the world. Even in the middle of a complete all-out attack of nerves, of itching, of hives, of discomfort, even in the middle of the night where you think you're going to just crawl out of your skin, there is this place inside you that you have a choice to go to. And you just crawl inside it and you go, this is what is. I don't know where it goes, why it's here, or what to do with it, but this is what is. And there is this astounding sense of yes. You don't like it, not comfortable, not fun. It's everything Job went through. God tormented Job in much worse ways than just hives. You know, took away family, took away everything. And Job found the one thing that remained. The one thing that remained when everything was taken away, which was himself, the self. And that is the only thing that cannot be taken away from anybody, because it is the only eternal, the only complete truth. And when you find that self because of all of your suffering, when you find you have nowhere else to go, where the creams and the lotions don't work, where the doctors have failed you, where everything fails you, where can you go but inside? And inside there is this sense of bear with it, bear with me, be present, live this moment, moment to moment to moment. Don't project 5 moments away, because it'll make you crazy. If you think I'm going to be itching all night, your mind goes wild with fear and disturbance. You pull that back and you go, I'm itching in this moment. Period. And then you go deeper than that and you find yourself in this interesting place where it doesn't matter. You're just open. It's not like the suffering hasn't gone. It's just you haven't projected it into the future, so it hasn't gotten more power. You haven't denied it away or wished it away. You're just going, okay. And there is such a sense of presence. There's such a sense of truth. And there's also a kind of gratitude, because you have gone through this suffering to the one place that suffering can lead you to, which is the home of your own being. There will be times where suffering will be unbearable, truly. Probably for everybody at some point. The mind and the body will be absolutely outraged. Anger. And that will be the great test, if you will, of your spiritual work. The way the Zen monks have talked about this, and this has been always a very important story to me, is you're running from a tiger that's going to devour you. And you go to the edge of a cliff, and below the cliff is a 5,000 foot drop into oblivion. And the tiger is behind you, chasing you. And you jump off the cliff and you grab hold of a branch. And the branch is coming loose. And right growing out of that branch is a flower. And there you are. The tiger is going to devour you if you go forward. The ground is going to kill you when you fall. And in that moment where you could be in a state of full panic, you look at the flower. That's the Zen idea. Then the branch comes out and you're falling. Well, that may be the time to panic for the body, but it may not. It may be that you just fall. And it goes, I am falling. It's not projecting hitting the ground. It's not projecting the death and the oblivion and the annihilation that you live in terror of all the time. It's falling. And then somewhere in that will be a very cataclysmic millisecond of experience. So your whole life, your entire life, probably was lived avoiding that millisecond. You probably spent, from the moment you learned that death existed, years of fear for that moment. Talk about wasted energy. Energy that could be used for having a great life, for doing, for accomplishing, for living, for having love affairs, for doing whatever it is you want to do. All of that energy blown because of that millisecond that you're going to run into. I don't know that you enter into that millisecond without total panic and fear. I don't know. But so what? One millisecond of that may be the biological requirement of a human body. Maybe it doesn't even happen. But I do know that suffering in your life is essentially fear of losing life, or fear of the reality that you will lose life. But the truth is, reality is something extraordinary. It has nothing to do with the story of your life. It has nothing to do with the future, and it has nothing to do with the past. Reality has everything to do with this very moment. And if you can let your mind go from its wanderings and just be in this moment, day after day, year after year, decade after decade, you will have lived in touch with life, in touch with truth. And that will be the great joy and, if you will, reward of being. The saddest thing is to live an entire life and never touch reality. Never be in the moment. Never be here in the world. To always be in your mind, to always be in your fear, to always be in your projection, your desire, your running from or running toward, and never really here. Being here is reality. In truth, it's the only place you are. And it's not a particularly profound idea. You aren't anywhere else now except here, unless your mind is elsewhere. I mean, those of you who are saying, my body's killing me, and can he shut up already? You know, then you're already out of here. You're already gone. You're not here in the moment. I will shut up in a second. But be here for one second. Be truly here. And then really you won't want to be anywhere else. And suffering will not be an issue. Because suffering, when it comes, will just be reality. And reality will always be full of wonder. And even if it hurts, you can bear it because it is real. It means you're alive and you're part of the wonder of existence. Any questions?
I have a question. It seems to me, from the meditation that I've been doing with you, that the heart is the key to the process, and that we acquire, if you like, the heart closes in time and acquires some negative stuff around it. Part of our work is to release that stuff. Could you say any more about that?
Sure. Have an hour. Heart chakra is a very core part of the spiritual practice. There's a whole kind of yoga devoted to the heart chakra alone. It's called bhakti yoga. Heart chakra is, you know, I focus a lot on the heart and on the navel chakra, which is also deeply important in this work. The heart chakra is this place of love for others, and more importantly, on some level, love of yourself or love of being. Every child you've ever seen, any child you look at, is all heart chakra. They're just this wonderful love embrace of the world around them. It's completely open. And the parent who looks at the child sends back that love and receives love. It's a kind of built into the system. A little child has that sweetness about them. You know, that even the hardest criminal looks at a child often and just feels this incredible kind of love. And it just comes out. The child attracts it, and they attract it because they need it. It's how they grow. And they also give it back, because by giving it back, they get more. And that really is the exchange of human life. Giving and receiving love keeps us alive, keeps us in the world. The minute, however, that gets betrayed, and it happens at various points in people's lives, suddenly something happens. You know, you fall down and you hit your head and you go, I hurt myself. And you go, what hurt what? How did I do that to myself? And there's a little bit of a sense that I don't trust me. I don't trust me not to run into a wall or to, you know, stick my hand into a light socket or whatever you do as a child. And you start to build up a distrust of your own self, which is your ego, mind, body. And then you start to feel from other people who start to judge you that you're not worthy. They don't like you. And so you start to try to defend and protect yourself, and this crust starts, this armor starts to build around your heart, because it hurts so much to be not loved. It's so painful, because we're such sensitive organisms that not getting love from the world the way we did when we were an infant is so awful that we have to defend against the pain of that. And so we create this armor of being. And that armor of being we bring into our adult life, and for some people it is so thick, you can't imagine how you could even drill through it. But the power of the heart is a nanostructure. It can move through molecular space. The densest steel, the densest armor that you can create around your heart is impervious to that heart moving through it if it wants to. The love that comes from a teacher, and the love from a teacher I experienced from Rudy, was somebody who was simply basking in his own joy of being, and when he saw me, he loved me like nobody ever had, except maybe my mother, who was an unbelievably great heart chakra person. But Rudy just loved me, and his love began this journey through the molecularity of my density, my dense armor system, and my own system inside was going, I want that. And it started reaching the other way. And there started to be this attraction that was starting to come together, and then they joined. And there was a path of opening. And I would sit with Rudy, and he would open me up. He would send more energy than I could handle, actually. And that energy would just kind of open the channel up more. And then I started loving Rudy back, because he was giving me so much. And that love coming back to Rudy was opening me more. And then it kept going more and more and more and more and more. And then it got to the point where mostly I was in charge of staying open. And if somebody would come at me and go, you know, you're no good, I would get these reviews for movies I would do. And they would say, you know, they would put me down so badly. It was really awful. And I would just feel this shutting down inside. And that shutting down was awful. But then I had my practice. I no longer had Rudy alive in the world, but I had my practice. So I sat down and I began again, reaching out. And the channels were still there. They just filled in with sand, basically, from all these other people throwing their crap at me. And I just cleaned it out, washed it out. And it opened it up again, and realized it's not that hard, really, to open your heart chakra. People think it is, but it's sitting there in every person I've ever known, crying to open. Crying. Half the time, the door that's closed in your heart is one you closed when you were like 4 years old. You went, not going out of there again. And so the being that one has to address as a teacher is a four-year-old. I don't go to a person like you and go, I'm dealing with an intelligent, you know, adult, because that's not the person who's closed the door. It's this little kid, long ago, and you have to go in there too and find that child and go, honey, it's okay. It's really okay. Embrace that child and say, okay, come on, let's open the door together. You're going to be okay. And that's kind of what the work is. But spiritually, it doesn't have that kind of sort of dramatic aspect. It's much more abstract or direct. It doesn't go through the psychodrama of therapeutic approach. It goes right to the core. It's just love to love and opening. And as it opens more and more and more, one of the things you discover is it has no end in its ability to open. And the embrace that comes out of your heart is universal. And once it's really blasting away, you will be loving life, humanity, everyone who comes in your presence, even the people you don't like. And this is really interesting. You sit with those people and you just look at them. Why is this person so distasteful, so unpleasant? And you just sit with that. And this thing opens up because you know inside that person is struggling just as hard as you did to get out. All they want to be is loved as well, even if they've done terrible, distasteful things. That's all they want. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Bhakti yoga. You know, read the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita lists all the different yogas. You know, there's you know, the yoga of karma yoga, the yoga of work. There's the yoga that Advaita yoga, which is essentially what I'm now practicing, which is the yoga of you are what you're looking for, that you're already that. There's Kundalini yoga, but they don't talk about that so much, but Kundalini yoga is an effort to break open all of these sort of channels that are clogged up in people, to really aggressively work on this movement of energy through your body. There's just lots of different yogas. Yoga of renunciation, which is going into a cave and blotting the world out, and it talks about the values and the problems with each of these yogas, and it's really an amazing work. It's the Hindu song of God, the Bhagavad Gita, the equivalent of the Bible in Hinduism, and so it'll give you a history of all of that. Guys, thank you very much. Tomorrow, if some people would sign up for fruit and coffee cakes for the next week or two, I'd appreciate it, because we're scrambling around to get that from people. If when I say that to you, something in you goes, I don't want to do it, that's when you should do it. The minute those of you go, of course, I'll do it, I don't want you. Okay. Thank you very much.